footballer. Thank you very much for doing this. How are you?
I'm well. How are you guys?
We are well. You'll be thrilled to know that since we last spoke, Karen has watched some World's Strongest Man.
See, we've got another convert.
So it's so funny because you were talking about it, and that went on to a conversation between Scott and I about, you know, it's just a bunch of like dudes, you know, originally that were kind of trying to outdo themselves and stuff and figure out what they could lift. And now they've made it like into a professional sport. And
yeah,
I look at the, and I'm seeing these guys try and lift like 3 motorbikes and like carry it for like, I don't know, like maybe like 20, 30 feet, whatever the case may be. And I'm going like, this is ridiculous, but I can't take my eyes off of it.
Well, what I like about, like, most sports really don't have any practical application, right? I mean, shooting a puck
right.
into a net doesn't really translate to the real world. But if, you know, if you have a neighbor who can carry 3 motorbikes, you could use that guy. I mean, you want to move a sofa, you're calling that guy. You know, the guy who can shoot a hockey puck, I mean, he may be athletic, but, you know, the guy in the other house, he can lift 3 motorbikes. That's a handy skill. So I hope you're inspired at some point, Karen, to try and pull a bus with a rope. That's all.
Well, you know, it's called useful muscles, right? He's got useful strength.
That's right.
Like, you know, he doesn't just do, you know, dumbbell curls. He's got useful. It's the application, like you say. Yes.
Functional.
So, functional. Yes. I don't know if I'll be going, you know, to lift some couches and training if I'm going to do that, but maybe I'll think about it.
I love it. Some guy opens his garage in the neighborhood. Hey, man, what seems to be the problem? Ah, we were supposed to have a mover here. We got 3 motorbikes we need to move. Tell you what, let me go get my friend. Funny thing, he does this for a living.
Yeah, Magnus Vermagnuson lives just down the street. Let me give him a call.
Be awesome. It would be awesome. Rick Ball joining us here this morning, play-by-play voice for Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. You're on the side of the business where you're not supposed to cheer, Baller, but did you find yourself cheering for the human story last night as the Canucks took back to the ice?
Yeah, that was a hard game not to have a favorite based on what happened. You know, what a way for them to win, right? I mean, they were outplayed by a wide margin in all aspects for the first 40 minutes, except for Braden Holtby in goal. He was unbelievable. And then they seemed to find their legs in the third period, battle back, tie it up, win the game in overtime. You know, Horvat gets a couple goals. Just a great story all around. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to be able to sustain it. I hope so, just in terms of – I hope so just because that would mean that the team is feeling a lot better, and that's the biggest, obviously, issue is their health. But that was a pretty good story last night for Vancouver, and not just the fact they won, but how they did it made for a nice night.
The realist in all of us knows what lies ahead for the Canucks, and the chances of them getting back into the race is so slim. And I was on with Tim McAuliffe on Friday, and we were talking about this on the air. Like, what would it be if somehow they got back into this race? And I don't know if we equate it to the Miami Marlins making the playoffs last year when they were the team that had the COVID outbreak in Major League Baseball. I'm not sure there is an equivalent out there, Rick.
Yeah, it'd be tricky. I mean, they have a ton of games. So the teams they're chasing are Calgary and Montreal. The two teams will have to leapfrog, right? So they've got 6 games in hand on Calgary and 4 in hand on Montreal. And they're 10 back of fourth place in terms of points. So it's a long shot, but it's not impossible. They would have to get on an incredible tear. But, you know, this crazy season, who knows? I mean, looking at it even from a Calgary perspective, seemed like a week ago, they were dead and buried, and all of a sudden they get that win in Montreal. Even though they lost on Friday, they're now within 6 points, and they've got 3 games coming up in 4 nights against Montreal in Calgary, Friday, Saturday, Monday. And depending on what happens with the teams this week, they could have a chance to leapfrog over Montreal in the fourth place. And, you know, it wasn't that long ago people were writing off the Calgary Flames. So in this season, when you're playing the teams that you're chasing so often, I don't think anything is totally out of the question, even though it might be a long shot.
And let's look at this Calgary Flames team. Of course, they are playing Ottawa tonight. And Ottawa, unlike Edmonton, who went 9-0 against them, a sense of struggle. That's a sense of 1-5-7 against Calgary. What have you seen when watching these games? Like, why has Calgary struggled so much against Ottawa?
Yeah, it's a real head scratcher, Karen. I'm not sure why. The thing is, you know, not to go back to Montreal as well, but they've lost 5 against Ottawa too. So for whatever reason, the Senators have seemed to have the number of the Calgary Flames and the Montreal Canadiens. 10 of Ottawa's 15 wins have come against those two teams. So I don't know. I have no explanation for it. Early on in the year, there were wild swings between games. Ottawa won the first game 6-1. Calgary won the second one 6-3. Ottawa won the third one 5-1. Calgary won the fourth one 7-3. So it's not like we've got a bunch of nail-biters going on. There was one shootout game, but it's just been a weird season series so far. On paper, the Flames are the better team, but, you know, give Ottawa credit. They have that youthful enthusiasm. They have a lot of really good young players. They just don't have a ton of experience yet, and there are definitely some holes in their lineup, and their goaltending wasn't very good early in the year. So, but on any given night, that team can make you work for it, and they've done a good job against the Flames. Now, having said that, this is a huge game for Calgary. They cannot take them lightly. Not that they should. I mean, obviously, the fact that the Sens have won 5 of 7, the Flames have to take them seriously. But getting back to what we were just talking about a moment ago, about Calgary trying to reel in Montreal, if the Flames are able to win this game tonight, and Montreal has 2 against Edmonton, they're in Edmonton tonight and Wednesday, that sets up a scenario where if the Flames sweep the 3 games against Montreal on the weekend in Calgary, they're in 4th place. So, again, as much as it's a tough hill to climb and they've got a lot of work to do and they need some help, it's definitely not impossible, and that's the way they have to be thinking. That, you know, treat every game like a playoff game. Play with the intensity they have been in recent games. Even the game they lost on Friday in Montreal, I thought Calgary played really well. They just happened to be on the wrong end of the score. They were probably the better team on the whole and had 4 goalposts, I think, in that game. But if they keep playing with that level of intensity, then their chances of reeling Montreal in are a lot better. And it starts with tonight against a team that, for whatever reason, they've struggled against.
And when it comes to looking at what they've done lately, Calgary, Rick, are they starting to play? They're figuring out that Daryl Sutter system a lot better. Like, he keeps on saying, you know, they're still trying to get it. They're still trying to figure it out after games. But are you starting to see signs that, yeah, they're getting it now and it's going in the right direction?
Yeah, I think, well, I'm sure we talked about this before. I thought pretty much immediately after Sutter took over, the play in their own end of the rink was improved, I believe. Mm-hmm. Their breakouts were more cohesive. They were more connected in terms of how they were playing in their own end. There were a few breakdowns still, and that was probably due to lack of familiarity with the system. Not that it was that dramatic a change. It was more about playing with tempo that Daryl Sutter wanted. But that part of the game, I thought, started improving right away after he took over. Their offense really dried up for a while. And, you know, was it a matter of puck luck? Daryl Sutter seemed to hint that it was more they just weren't getting any breaks, so they were running into some hot goaltending. They finally started to find the back of the net during that 3-game win streak. So, you know, if you can extrapolate from that the offensive side of the game is starting to come around a bit, coupled with the fact that I think they've been a much better team defensively, in terms of their structure, then yeah, they do seem to be grasping what he wants in terms of how they're supposed to play and even systems that he wants to implement a little more. They've had it, and in a weird way, that what happened with Vancouver may have helped Calgary, because they had a bunch of days off that they didn't expect to have and were able to practice and get some more practice time in, and I think that probably helped them when it comes to trying to do what Daryl Sutter wants and play the way he wants them to play. So in an odd way, as much as it's throwing a monkey wrench into the schedule, those extra few days of practice time, I think, helped the Flames fine-tune their game, and that may be a factor as well.
In conversation with Rick Ball this morning on Rintoul and Sermon, you mentioned how Ottawa has played against Calgary. It's such a weird year, isn't it, Rick? Montreal, as you mentioned, playing Edmonton tonight. Like, the Habs are 4-1 against the Oilers. Edmonton is 5-2 against Winnipeg. Vancouver's dominated Ottawa. Calgary's been really good against Vancouver. I can't figure out the pattern with any of these teams, because the tougher matchups for some seem to be easy and vice versa.
It's why I don't gamble. Nothing makes any sense, and this year especially, right? I think the topsy-turvy nature of the NHL schedule and playing one team so many times, and it's very difficult when you play a team 3 or 4 times in a row to win all those games, right? That's not easy to do. So I think you're seeing a lot of that dynamic at work as well. And then just the psychological stress and pressure of playing under the circumstances they're playing, not being able to, I mean, I hate to complain too much about it, but the reality is what makes the season so different is when you're on the road, you're sitting in your room staring at the wall, right, the entire time, unless you're at the rink. And it's tough when you're in a city for a week playing the same team 3 times. So there's a lot going on this year that wouldn't be happening in a normal season. And I think that might go a long way to explaining why we've seen these bizarre outcomes in terms of teams dominating one team and then losing to another one, but the team that they dominated beats the team that they lost to regularly. There's no rhyme or reason to any of it. So, you know, having said all that, it's also part of the reason I think why the Flames and even the Canucks have some hope, as long a shot as that might seem, because in this crazy year, it wouldn't surprise me at all if somebody does something, you know, gets on a huge run at the end of the season and manages to make some noise and even grab a playoff spot when nobody expected them to.
It's a really good point, Rick, because Montreal comes out, beats Calgary on Friday, and we're at the point of the season for the Flames and Canucks when you're talking about playoff projections where, like, one loss feels like three, and then comes out the next night, gets Carey Price back, and gets shut out by the Ottawa Senators. Montreal is this really weird team where I feel like if they get into the playoffs, they might actually cause some noise, and yet I'm not convinced they're going to get there as of yet. How about you?
That's exactly right. I mean, look at the start of the year, in the first few weeks, they look like they were the best team in the division. And then they lose a few games and drop a few to Ottawa, and they fire their coach. You know, like, wow. And talk about a complete 180 in terms of expectations. And, you know, they kind of sputtered along ever since. So I don't know what to expect out of Montreal. And, you know, the Flames have, like I said, the fact is they're playing the team they're trying to reel in three times in four nights at home coming up at this weekend. You know, they've got a chance. Again, it's going to be tough. But they're not out of it yet, and that seemed like, you know, if you would have suggested that a couple of weeks ago when Calgary was really struggling and in the middle of an eight-game losing skid, you would have been laughed out of the room. But not anymore. And like we talked about with Vancouver, with all those games in hand, they're not totally out of it either. So I don't know what to make of Montreal. I think they're probably a better team than they have been of late. But you know, they've had a tough go, and they're having a hard time finding any consistency. You know, they haven't really been getting much offense, which is odd. You look you know, some of the numbers that they were getting out of the goaltending position, even with Carey Price hurt, and then you look at the fact that they were losing, and you realize they just have not been able to put the puck in the net at the pace that you expect them to with the talent. I mean, poor Jake Allen was hardly getting any run support at all, even though he was playing pretty well. So that's surprising based on, you know, what they have on paper. And, you know, again, they could be a team that goes on and wins the next eight games and comfortably grabs that final playoff spot, and this conversation is moot at that point. But who knows? I think it's going to be a crazy race to the finish line, and I look forward to watching it. It should be fun.
One team, we talk about how Montreal, if they can get on a heater, you know, they've got Carey Price, you know, they can make some noise in the playoffs. Toronto, obviously, we talk about as being the best team, but they have some question marks. Winnipeg, I think personally they're set up to make a deep run, personally, with that depth. There's not a lot of talk about Edmonton, though. Yet Edmonton is 5-2, as Scott pointed out, against Winnipeg this season. What do you make of this Edmonton team?
Yeah, I mean, they've got two of the best players in the world.
Yeah.
You know, Mike Smith's been playing extremely well. I think they're a really good team. I mean, they, you know, are there holes in the lineup? For sure. But I like their team, and I think they're for real. And I would agree with you. I think the two best teams in the division are probably Toronto and Winnipeg, but Edmonton's not that far behind. And, you know, to toss a coin at this point, no team in the Northern Division is perfect. I think probably Winnipeg, based on the fact that Connor Hellebuyck is the best goaltender in the division. If I had to lay it, and I said, like I told you before, I don't gamble, but if I had to bet $5, I might put it on the Jets to come out of the division once we get to the playoffs and move on to the semifinals. But it's anybody's guess. You know, all three of those teams, I think, are good enough to do it. And who knows? You know, the fourth place team, we've seen it before. I mean, the argument used to be, do you just want to squeak into the playoffs and get knocked out in the first round? I mean, too many teams have come from low seeds and now to win. I mean, Daryl Sutter coached the LA Kings. They squeaked in at the end of the year and won the Stanley Cup as the eighth seed and steamrolled everybody doing it. So that argument goes out the window as well. But based on what we're seeing right now, you know, I'd probably say Winnipeg is the best team in the Northern Division at this point.
Rick, 10 or 15 years from now, if someone who never saw him play asks you about Patrick Marleau, how will you describe him?
Well, I had the good fortune of covering Patrick Marleau when he was a junior player. I was in the Western Hockey League back in the 90s, and he was a young player with the Seattle Thunderbirds, and I say to this day, one of the best players I covered in that time. I got the pleasure of calling games involving Jerome Iginla, you know, Marian Hossa. I saw some great players in that time. I was there for 5 years doing the Kelowna Rockets. Patrick Marleau was right up there, and, you know, it's just a great story to, you know, he's been a guy who's been able to stay healthy, who's been a top-end player for a long time, and obviously it's tapering off now that he's nearing the end. But the fact that he's – I never expected him to break Gordie Howe's record. You know, I never saw that coming. But he was always a durable guy with high-end skill. So the fact that he's been a great National Hockey Leaguer isn't a surprise to me. But doing what he's done, I don't think anybody could have seen that coming, because that seemed like it might have been untouchable at the time. So – and he's a great guy on top of it all, right? I mean, he knows Kelly Rudy really well. I probably saw the story on the weekend they were talking about it, and Kelly's talked about it before. But when Kelly finished his career with the San Jose Sharks, Patrick Marleau was a rookie, and he lived with Kelly and Donna the first year. And, you know, they talked about how Donna used to make them turkey sandwiches all the time. And, you know, here's this 18-year-old kid directly out of junior hockey from Aneroid, Saskatchewan, going to the Bay Area. I mean, talk about a culture shock. And, you know, Kelly and Donna took him in, and here we are all these years later, and he's about to break one of the most incredible records in the sport. So good for him. I don't know him really well, but anytime I've had a chance to talk to him, whether it was as a junior hockey player in the NHL, always impressed. He's a quiet guy, but, you know, just a really good player. I actually saw people debating, do you think he's a Hall of Famer? I'm like, are you kidding me? He's a Hall of Famer. Oh, he was never the very best player of his time. I'm like, I don't care. He was a top-end player. Won gold medals for Canada and has played more games than anybody else in the history of the NHL. And what is, I don't have his point total in front of me, but over whatever, how many points, 1,300 points he's got in his career, whatever it is, like, give me a break. That's a slam dunk, first ballot, no brainer as far as I'm concerned. The fact that it's even a debate tells me how silly some people are. Well, and, you know, good for him. I like the guy as a person, and I'm happy to see him reach a milestone that's amazing. I mean, how else do you put it?
We will invite you back on the next time we debate whether or not Patrick Marleau is a Hall of Famer on this show.
Oh, was that you?
It wasn't
you, that
just
guy?
Me. I wasn't just me. I put it out there, and I'll tell you, it was pretty mixed reviews.
All right. That's it. That's it, Scotty. I'm not coming back on until you change your mind, my friend.
I wasn't the one leading the campaign. I literally just put the open-ended question out there, and yeah, it was mixed reviews from our listenership.
Really?
Yes.
That's shocking to me.
What would be more shocking is if you wear a turtleneck tonight. Is that going to happen?
I want to get my hair going like that. Like, I don't know what he's done to that. Is he using some kind of a, like, has he got a hawk comb or something he's using in his hair now? Like, how does he get it to do that even?
It's pretty incredible. Did you see Murph rocking the turtleneck last night?
Oh, did he? I didn't.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I watched the game, but I didn't notice Murph in the turtleneck. Is he doing it now?
Yes, and we want to know if Rick Ball is going to get on this fashion trend.
Lord, is Ron Burgundy doing our wardrobe now or what?
He could be. He could be. Are you going to jump on board?
All right. I will. If you come around and admit that Patrick Marleau is a slam dunk Hall of Famer, I'll put a turtleneck on.
We'll get there. Thanks, Baller.
That's hilarious. All right. See you guys. Bye.
Thanks, Rick.